Welcome back to Horizons. Dr. Michael Conway is one of our guests in a week's time on our online mission, Hope Alive. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Mary. Happy New Year to you and a Happy New Year to your listeners.
Thank you very much. Same to you. You were a guest last year as well, and people were fascinated by what you had to say. But first of all, Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from Mayo.
I'm from County Mayo. I'm from a small little village called Duhoma, near Ballymullet, way out on the west. But I went to school in Galway, so I'm actually a priest of the Galway Diocese. I worked for a couple of years in parish ministry. I did some extra study, and then I went to Maynooth, where I've remained for the last, I think, 20, 23 years, teaching theology. That's where I come from, as it were.
And I know that you studied science and different things along the way. How did the priesthood really draw you in?
I think it goes back to secondary school. I think near the end of secondary school, I had a sense that this might be for me. I never had any great confidence about it. And I went to Maynooth, and it's still the most powerful thing that draws me in terms of whatever life is.
You're lecturing in and you're teaching in the area of faith and culture. And when you look at the priesthood, even when you had your vocation and joined, it was kind of counterculture, really.
I don't see it that way. I don't like the whole idea of seeing it as being counterculture. I mean, I think that being a priest or priesthood or being a person of faith, you emerge within the culture. And in a sense, you open up possibilities from within. You don't stand over against and present something that's an alternative. That, to me, is not Christian faith. You point to a depth of reality from within a culture. And in that way, I think, what a person of faith is not just about the person themselves. It's also about the culture. So your faith is not a gift just to you. It's a gift to those you encounter, those with whom you interact, those you live with, and so on and so forth.
That is really a beautiful way to put it and to construct it. Just from knowing people that have responsibility or take on the role of promoting vocations to the priesthood, they talk about the struggle that it is today.
Yeah, I mean, I think to understand what's happening around priesthood, you need to understand that it's taking place in a much bigger change that's taking place at the level of culture and society. A whole world is kind of collapsing, as it were, and something new is being put in place, and priesthood is getting caught up in that turmoil. So in a way, priesthood made perfect sense, or at least as we now understand it, made perfect sense in a different world order. And it's more difficult now to understand what priesthood might be in the kind of culture that's now emerging. I think that's the way I would see what's happening with priesthood. It's almost like it's a symptom. It indicates something, as it were.
That really leads to the whole challenge it is to be a priest in today's world. Father Des O'Mahony, he summarised your article that you wrote recently in The Furrow. We had it here on Horizons. We looked at clericalism, we looked at women in the church, we looked at synodality. You need to almost reconstruct how you are being a priest in this world, in the culture. That's challenging, surely.
Yes, absolutely. There's two sides to it. In terms of your own identity, certainly we have reached a point where I, as a priest, I need to let go of a certain form of identity and move into a space that has a different kind of expression that mirrors the kind of conversations we're now having on synodality. That's definitely true. But that, to me, is a mark of growth. That's not a negative thing. I mean, moving and growing and changing is something healthy. But also on the other side, you know, what you are as a priest, you don't determine that yourself. Others determine that too, because they relate to you according to how they understand what priesthood is. So even your identity as a priest, it's your own, but it's also a communal understanding. And you have to negotiate that. And sometimes that's both complex and difficult and frustrating.
But you also have the institution that has given you your set of rules and has set you up to be a particular way.
Yes. I mean, I think it's obvious if I say that the institution itself, too, is now going through a radical period of change. The institution as it was, which was a very powerful apparatus in society, I mean, it's crumbling at an enormous rate, so that even the institutional structures and parameters, they themselves are being changed. And I mean, it's extraordinary what Pope Francis has been doing and is doing in terms of reimagining what church is in terms of society and what it is to be an institution that's at the service of the culture and society.
Absolutely. And he is trying to do wonderful work. We just hope he survives long enough to make an even more of an impact. So the crumbling of the institution, does that ever get you down, Mike?
No. When I say crumbling, I don't mean disappearing totally. I mean crumbling as in changing, as in needing to change, as in needing to find new expressions, even of the institution itself and so on. It doesn't get me down. I just see it as intrinsic to life and intrinsic to faith life.
So you see hope in all of this?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Not only do I see hope, it can't be otherwise. If everything was exactly now as it was in the 1950s, that would depress me.
It would depress a lot of us.
Right, because I'd know it was dead. I'd know there was no life. But the very fact that things are in movement tells me this is A, really important, and this is life-giving. I readily admit that it is more and more difficult in our culture to access the life of faith than, say, in earlier generations. But maybe it's a richer experience when you do it in the kind of culture we're now in.
Dr. Michael Conway, thank you very much for chatting to me this morning. Look forward to having you on Monday night as part of our online mission, Hope Alive.
You're very welcome, Mary, and I look forward to speaking on the mission. Take care.
Our mission song is Ian Callanan's Go Out.
Go out to all creation and tell the wonders our God has done.
Sing out to every nation. Go sing the stories to everyone.
Kennedy Hanlon, thanks very much for joining me this morning on Horizons.
Good morning, Mary. It's great to be here. Thank you.
And Marie, I know of some of the great work you were involved in with the choir during COVID and a number of activities like that, but you're not here to talk about that today.
I was out in Medjugorje for the first time in September. I was meant to go 33 years ago, but my father dropped dead.
Were you impressed by it?
I was hugely impressed by Medjugorje. I've been to Lourdes at least 12 or 14 times with sick children at Easter in my single days. And I thought Lourdes was beautiful, and it is beautiful. But my first experience of Medjugorje, I must say that it was absolutely amazing. The prayer side of it, the peace, I suppose, is what really hit me out there. There was huge peace in Medjugorje.
Did you go with a large group?
Yeah, we went with a group led by Bridie McCarthy from Carrasaveen. A beautiful group, lovely, lovely people. Very fortunate to meet such beautiful people that week. And we were most fortunate to have Father Brendan Walsh as our spiritual director for our week in Medjugorje.
And your faith and your church, it's very important to you, Mairead.
My faith is hugely important to me and has been all my life. And I would have huge devotion to Padre Pio and the Sacred Heart. And I was delighted to be asked by Castle Island Padre Pio prayer group there to speak for the close of their Padre Pio last July about what Padre Pio means to me and how he has affected my life and my family's life over the years.
But Medjugorje was a new experience. And you loved
it. Medjugorje was a new experience and it was just amazing. And I suppose why I'm here today, Mary, to speak to you is it's in relation to a half a day's excursion that we had during our week in Medjugorje when we went to visit Chanakalo community.
Chanakalo. And what is that community?
Chanakalo community is a community for people with addiction, primarily addiction with from drugs, but also alcohol, gambling, any addiction really, but primarily drug addiction.
How is it organised?
Chanakalo community was set up by a wonderful, wonderful nun, an Italian nun, Sister Elvira, in 1983 in Italy, about an hour away from Turin, northern Italy. And she, along with another nun colleague, Sister Aurelia, I think was her name, and a male teacher, the three of them actually established this community, but primarily it was Sister Elvira. And they were actually gifted a derelict house at a cost of $1 a year. It was run down, and she did up that house to accommodate people suffering from addiction.
And has that spread?
The Chanakalo community is in 18 countries.
18 countries
at the moment. There's one community in Africa. There's 12 in Europe, one in North America, and four in South America.
How do you spell it, Mairead?
C-E-N-A-C-O-L-O, Chanakalo.
Okay.
I didn't realise until two of the residents at Chanakalo community in Medjugorje gave their testimony. And it was then that I heard there was a Chanakalo community in Knock in Ireland.
Oh, right.
So even though I would go to Knock twice a year, I had never heard of it before.
No, nor me.
I was very impressed by the way that these young people have been able to turn their lives around. You know, I gave it a lot of thought for the remainder of my days in Medjugorje and then coming home as well. And I wanted to do something proactive and not just come home and forget about what I experienced. So I actually phoned Knock and I made an appointment and I went up the following week and I met the 12 lads above in the community and I got such a warm welcome from them. Absolutely amazing from different countries that are a part of this programme.
How long do they stay in the community?
They can stay there indefinitely, but I think it's suggested that they stay for 3 years minimum. And they can stay for 5 years and they can stay beyond that, or they can stay less than that and go on to another Chanakalo community.
They have suffered from addiction and they're fighting their addictions through this.
They're fighting their addiction through that. The Chanakalo community is not so much a therapeutic community or a drug rehab centre. It's actually a school of life with prayer at its heart.
Very, very interesting.
It's a kind of intensive spiritual boot camp where they can learn to live in a totally new way and accept a simpler lifestyle and discover the gifts of work and friendship and faith.
Are they all single?
No, they're married or single. The community in Knock is primarily for male only. They have to go through an interview process in Dublin before they're accepted in for this programme. And if any females want to participate, there are houses and communities in Europe that look after female residents. But in Knock, it's male only at the moment.
So, Mairead, you wanted to do something to support this.
I did, because when I visited them in Knock, they can accommodate 12 participants. But they're building an extension onto the house where they can accommodate 20. And I thought, you know, it'd be wonderful to do something proactive here. So I booked the community centre in Asti for a tea dance, which we're having on the 4th of February. And I've booked the singing Jarvie in Killarney. Ger Healy, he's fantastic and he plays great music and gets everybody on the floor. So he's going to be providing the music on the 4th of February. The tea dance will only bring in a certain amount of money and I wanted to raise the maximum amount. So then before Christmas, I got 100 books of tickets, actually, with 10 tickets in each book printed at €10 each. That would bring in 10,000 from the raffle alone if I can sell the 100 books of tickets.
So you're selling the tickets and you want people to come to the tea dance as well?
Yes.
So if people want to support this, where can they get tickets?
The first prize, a trip to Medjugorje, all expenses paid trip for one person to Medjugorje. The tickets will be available at Listowel Parish Office and Father Brendan Welsh is the contact person for the parish office in Ballyduff. Friday the 19th of January, we'll be in Garvey's to sell the tickets.
This is a lovely project, very interesting. If people want to find out more about the community that you're supporting, is there information online?
There is. It's Chinakalo Community Knock. Two of the participants at Chinakalo Community in Knock will be coming to the tea dance on the 4th of February and they will give their testimony. And also one of the trustees, Father Declan Lohan, he's a young priest based in County Galway, ordained in 2017, and he will come down to receive the cheque from Father Brendan Welsh, who will present the proceeds from the sale of the tickets and the tea dance to him on the 4th of February.
Marie, thank you for coming along to Horizons this morning to tell us all about this. Best of luck with it.
Thank you so much, Mary. Thank you very much.
This day next week, our mission online begins. You can download the booklet on dioceseofkerry.ie and, of course, you can register. After the break, one of our mission speakers, Keith Gaynor.